This is Mayo Clinic Radio, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. We'll take you beyond the headlines to explain what developments in medicine mean to you. Join the conversation by phone, Twitter, Facebook, or radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Tracy McRae.
And I'm Dr. John Ebert in for Dr. Tom Shives.
Welcome, everyone, to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. It would be fair to say that the mouth is literally, I suppose, and figuratively too, the gateway for gauging our body's overall health. The condition of the gums, the tongue, and even the plaque on your teeth, they can all be indicators of something else that might be going on in the body. We all know that we should brush and floss our teeth every day, but there's a lot more to oral health than just doing that.
That's right, Tracy. Today on Mayo Clinic Radio, Dr. Thomas Salinas, professor of dentistry, will join us to discuss our oral health. We'll talk about how certain medications can impact your oral health and why the incidence of cavities is on the rise. We'll also discuss new ways of restoring, replacing, and bleaching your teeth. Also, the astonishing increase of mouth and throat cancer and the link with HPV that may surprise many of our listeners. And you'll know, I'll insist we include tobacco and its effects on the mouth.
I had to put that on the list because I knew you would.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a lot to discuss, so we're going to get right to it. Good morning, Dr. Salinas. We're so happy to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, let's talk about that link to overall health. How is it that you can look in someone's mouth and then say, oh, there's something else going on with your body?
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, it's very similar to what we see in our patient population. Patients come to us and we try to make a general oral diagnosis, and frequently there are other signs that patients have with their associated disease state. Some people have a manifestation of even systemic disease that we can see on some of their soft tissue surrounding their teeth, the overall health and state of oral health that they have. Looking at some of the gums and soft tissues, give us sort of a window into that.
Like what kind of diseases? How does that, some of the examples?
Certainly. A number of the gum tissues surrounding teeth can have sort of an inflammatory type appearance. Mm. Skin may take on a different look other than normal. It can be indicative of other types of immunosuppression. Some patients have disease states, diabetes perhaps, that show a superinfection with maybe candida, lichen planus, and even a dry mouth might be indicative of diabetes.
Go back. What were those other two things?
Lichen planus is sort of an autoimmune type phenomenon. It can affect skin, but it also affects skin in the mouth. Okay. And we can see that frequently in our patient population. So diabetes is one of those diseases that's obviously epidemic in this country.
Right.
So we're beginning to find out hidden ways of sort of looking at this in the mouth is often sometimes the first indicator of the disease.
Yeah, I know. I have talked with eye doctors in the past, and they've said that they also can spot diabetes possibly before the general practitioner can say, this is something we should look at. What does someone's mouth look like that has diabetes? What is it that's different?
Well, diabetes can be manifested in several ways. It can be either controlled with insulin. It could be controlled with other types of medications. Sometimes, regardless of the type of diabetes, there's some level of immunosuppression that these patients have. Mm. And as a result of that, they're more prone to the effects of, let's say, severe gum disease, severe periodontitis, as we call it. Periodontitis is one of several disease states that can manifest and diabetes. Some of the patients may have manifestations of yeast infections.
Sure.
That's also a common manifestation of patients with diabetes. The overall feeling of their mouth also can be affected. Some of these patients have what's called a burning mouth. They may also have some altered sensation and even taste. Mm. So they are quite affected by a variety of disease states.
I know when we've had some of our cardiologists in here, our cardiologist friends, and they talk about coronary artery disease, they will say that they'll look to see if there's a lot of plaque on the teeth. Mm. And that's one of the reasons why you should be flossing and brushing so carefully. Does it make a you had told me beforehand that that's something that the link is being explored, I guess.
True. Coronary artery disease by itself in association with oral disease is something that we're looking into more. There has been some association established. It's not very clear yet, but we do see that many of our patients that are missing teeth, there is a missing tooth sort of correlation with certain types of disease states, and coronary artery disease is one of those states that we see some association. Again, it's not very clear.
I think the link in the hypothesis relates to this idea of an inflammatory state. So if you have a lot of bacteria in the mouth or a lot of overgrowth in the mouth, and it leads to an inflammatory state, and that inflammatory state becomes systemic, and it can involve the blood vessels of the head and the heart, and much like obesity is an inflammatory state, this sort of chronic overrun bacterial overload in the mouth can lead to this chronic inflammatory state. Mm-hmm. So that's inflammatory hypothesis, I think, is that link.
Well,
but it's
also
not a strong link.
You had mentioned that you can tell if someone if they're throwing up a lot. I know when I had chemotherapy that my dentist would say, oh, I can tell that you're having trouble right now. What is it about vomit and the acid that is in that presents itself in the mouth?
Yeah, so twofold. With chemotherapy, is a sort of a double effect. Chemotherapy agents often have an effect directly on the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the agents used, especially in this day and age, have a really bad effect on oral tissues because they're turned over so quickly. And that's largely what chemotherapy agents are aimed at, tissue that's rapidly reproducing, and the oral lining definitely is affected by that directly. As a double whammy, if you have a sore created by the chemotherapy, if you vomit, or you should have nausea that produces vomiting, the acid from the stomach contents can secondarily irritate it, making it actually worse. So it can cause problems with the skin and the lining of the mouth, and of course, acid production can cause problems with tooth sensitivity and also decay ultimately. But this can wear the enamel away from teeth if it's done chronically.
Which is one of the ways that you can maybe find out if a patient is suffering from bulimia.
Correct. Yeah, that's certainly one, again, a window to the body, if you will. Chronic effects of acid reflux can even be found as well. We see many of our patients are affected by that. Some have a secondary problem of reflux that we see just based on the amount of tooth loss that they have, and it's not necessarily related to grinding. And we can kind of tell the difference between the two.
So what does it look like if someone has acid reflux? What does their mouth look like?
Well, in many cases, loss of tooth structure is primarily what I do. So I look for loss of what a normal tooth anatomically would look like. If I see certain amounts of it missing on all the teeth generalized, it isn't necessarily related to the way that teeth grind or work, if you will, against each other. Often it's a smooth type erosion, as we call it. Chemical type erosion is pretty common in these patients, and we see that in patients that have this chronic type reflux of acid into the mouth. And it could be something really small. As long as it's, if it's done consistently over time, it does have a cumulative effect, unlike other areas of the body. We can actually see that it may have been something that's happened for years past, or it may be something that's going on. We just don't know if it's active.
So I'm intrigued by this idea that, certain disease states will initially sort of manifest themselves in the mouth, and you would diagnose it based on that. The other thing that I think, I'm challenged with in primary care is we see a lot of these diseases, but we don't necessarily make strong recommendations for our patients in terms of how to care for your mouth differently because you have this disease. What would you say to a patient with diabetes, or what would you say to a patient who had some of these diseases to say, you need to take extra special care, or you need to spend a little more time doing other oral cares because of these diseases? Or, because we don't do that in primary care. We don't tell these patients to treat their mouth differently because they have this. What are your thoughts or reflections on that?
Well, very difficult in the general population, so to speak. Not everybody has, believe it or not, in this day and age, have access to regular dental care. The dental home, as a good friend of mine would call it. The dental home is regular dental care from a specific primary dental care provider. This includes regular dental examinations, hygiene cleanings, prophylaxis, as we call it, and routine radiographic x-rays of teeth, kind of getting an idea if there's any disease between teeth that we can't directly visualize, mainly back teeth. So these are all things that are very important. That includes a comprehensive soft tissue exam of the mouth and the head and the neck, screening for other types of disease processes. So if this is done on a regular basis by a dental health care provider, there's lots of things that can be avoided. And coordinated care between both the primary care area in your world and also the dental home, as it were.
It's time for a short break. Coming up, we're going to talk with Mayo Clinic oral specialist Dr. Thomas Salinas a little bit more about a long list of items, including what toothbrush should I be using. Plus, we're going to cover the myth or matter of fact, cavities in baby teeth are not a concern. Lots of chatter on that on Twitter already about that, so stay tuned. Remember, you can listen to Mayo Clinic Radio at any time, 24 hours a day on iHeartRadio. You can tweet us anytime, too. Hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking about oral health with our guest, Dr. Thomas Salinas. Dr. John Ebert is in for Dr. Tom Shives today. And so much chatter on Facebook and Twitter that I want to ask you a couple of these questions right away. One of them has to do with our myth or matter of fact, which is cavities in baby teeth are not a concern. First of all, is that a myth or a fact?
It's a myth. I mean, having primary tooth health, as it were, is very important for a variety of reasons. Even with the latest report, Surgeon General's report years ago first began to identify that many preschool-age children in this country still are afflicted with dental caries. And you might say, well, that's crazy. You know, this is the United States of America. Why is that going on? But the amount of natal and postnatal visits that women have in early childhood years with their infants is not as common in a dentist's office, let's say, than it would be in a pediatrician's office.
Yep.
So caries itself is an infectious process. Mm-hmm. It starts from the time we're born. Our mothers actually do transfer organisms to us. So during that time period, it's very important to address this head on. Having mothers really reduce the amounts of bacteria in their mouth, having very good oral care is important for the mother as much as it is for the newborn.
Mm-hmm.
Up until their first and second year when their primary teeth began to erupt. So having preventive care is just as important, if not more important.
But having a cavity, which are interchangeable, we want to make sure to say that. In a baby tooth, though, they all fall out. So what's the big deal?
Well, there's a variety of reasons to retain baby teeth, the first of which is certainly function. But as the child develops, it's really important for the spatial relationships of teeth to maintain with jaw growth. Many of these teeth, granted, as you say, are exfoliated. They're lost as you would leaves on a tree. But over time, it's important for the relationships that these teeth have with each other to maintain jaw function and shape.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So without having certain teeth in position, it can lead to crowding and basically what we call a malocclusion in an adult. This is acquired. It's not often intercepted. And without having the primary teeth in place, it can lead to this problem.
Space holders.
Space maintainers, right, yeah. Exactly. So that's important to maintain health.
A couple of comments that came along with that was Mika Thinks says, eventually they'll all fall out. I think it should be concerning, though, because doesn't it rot the gums? The gums are permanent. The teeth might fall out, but does that affect gum health?
Well, teeth are tissue, just like everything else in our body. With having diseased tissue in place, it's an infectious process. It can lead to local abscesses, gum abscesses. If the abscess becomes significant enough, it can lead to a local infection, systemic infection as well. And it can also damage the adjacent or developing teeth around it. So it's very important to maintain health.
Another comment that came up on Twitter about this children's cavities was kind of a piggyback onto that was my son is 5 years old and he has yellow teeth. Is there anything that we can do to prevent that?
It's hard to know, what the source of it is. It may be diet-related. It might be something in the child's development. There could be lots of reasons for it. General overall care with polishing and that sort of thing, I think, is reasonable. The color of the tooth may be something that is within the tooth, and it's very difficult to remove
How
that.
How does diet affect the color of your tooth? I mean, I understand blueberries, or coffee,
right?
The things
Cola.
That stain it, but...
Right. Diets rich in sulfur products and preservatives and other types of minerals can actually accumulate in developing teeth and tooth buds.
Okay.
So there's some concern with that, particularly diets in local water that has iron contents, like we do here in Minnesota, can actually discolor dentition as they're developing. That's a concern.
Let's go on to another one of our myths or matter of facts. Dry mouth is nothing more than an inconvenience. Is that a myth or a fact?
Definitely a myth. It's a big problem. It's a significant problem in our population. Dry mouth is one of the precursors for developing dental decay in teeth, primarily. Saliva produced by glands around the mouth have more of an effect of just lubricating the mouth. They have an anti-inflammatory effect. They have an antimicrobial. It kills bacteria in the mouth. It keeps bacteria from taking over the mouth, decaying teeth, and actually even causing periodontal disease. So the use of saliva as its lubricant in the mouth, it's important not just to have it as a comfort, but it's also a real important part of oral health. The bigger part of it is in our culture, we're having so many new medications that are both prescribed and used over the counter that create secondarily a dry mouth. And this is becoming rampant, but specifically with our older adults who take many medications. Some of these medications even interact with each other and produce a more accelerated effect of having a dry mouth.
So it's not just a bother. It is a concern when you do have dry mouth. It's something that needs to be addressed.
Definitely does. And it has to be done in a more accelerated fashion. If someone visits their dentist maybe twice a year and they're taking medications that make their mouth dry, they may want to have it looked at even more so.
But there's something unique about saliva because it isn't just moisture in the mouth, right? I mean,
correct.
It's got it also has protective properties, unique protective properties.
It does. Our salivary glands introduce antibodies into it. It keeps a bacterial count low. There are other products in it that allow our mouth a state of health. By reducing bacterial count, we're better able to debride the bacteria away on a daily basis. If we don't have the saliva there, and it doesn't even need to take a lot of plaque to cause disease in the first place. And frequently we'll see patients like that. They'll come in, their mouth will be dry, they'll not be really much plaque in their teeth at all, and yet there's rampant decay everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how can that happen without having a lot of plaque on your teeth? It happens because of the dry mouth.
So yeah, that was one of the things that you had told me before when we were corresponding about this program, was there is a dramatic uptick in the number of cavities that you're seeing, that dentists are seeing, and part of that is because patients are getting older, and also the pharmacology aspect
the
of it.
Pharmacy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's as I mentioned, with very young patients, the older patients in our patient population. We have to think about, everybody's talking about the baby boomer generation, and this is a generation now that's maintaining their teeth longer than any other generation in history. So, same token, having gingival or gum recession is all a part of aging. As we all get older, we'll lose a little bit of our coverage of gum tissue around teeth. So what does that do? That exposes the root surface of the tooth, the part that's not covered by the enamel, and that is the part of the tooth that's most susceptible to dental decay. So in many of our older adults that are on medications and have this gum recession, this is becoming a big problem with control of caries, root surface caries, as we call it. So it becomes a bigger problem with this population. And those are the patients that really do need to see their dentist for regular care and even sometimes, as I mentioned, at accelerated rate.
So if you have dry mouth, it is something to talk to your dentist about.
Absolutely.
All right. Coming up after the news break, we're going to talk about tobacco effects, and we're going to talk about HPV, two things that you think, what does those have to do with the dentist? But we're going to talk about both of those things. But I do have a couple of other myths here. One, I should have my amalgam fillings removed. Is that a myth or a fact?
Well, I think amalgam has been in the news quite a lot over the last 20 to 30 years. Amalgam has gotten a bad rap, so to speak, because it contains mercury.
So, amalgam then is just a... Just explain.
It's a mixture of, amalgam is a filling material used for many years for mainly back teeth to help restore tooth structure. It's a mixture of both tin and mercury and silver content. Okay. When it's mixed together, it's a very strong material. Removing it sometimes increases the exposure to mercury. So is it controversial to remove it as well in the first place? Rather than just leaving it as is, most of the mercury in the content of the amalgam is actually contained. It's sequestered with inside of it. So we don't look really at it as a source of being a problem with contamination of mercury.
And it's something, is that what a filling is today when you get a filling? Has that been modified or?
There are many different restorative materials. Some of them now we're actually machining. Some of the newer ceramics that are available are oxidized materials. They don't interact with anything. They're very aesthetic and they can be bonded to tooth structure. And it makes that sort of a new generation of materials that are available. There are areas of the mouth, however, controlling moisture, it's really important. And that's sometimes where amalgam is used.
And finally, let's talk about children's teeth specifically, but all ages, fluoride is important. So myth or matter of fact, adding fluoride to our water is overkill.
It's definitely a myth. I think fluoride is one of the biggest advances of the 20th century that's kept our population free on a large scale of having dental disease. There's no doubt about it. We can go to any database and it will clearly show that fluoride used in the right concentration is very safe for putting into drinking water.
Like by city, you can tell that?
Well, it's a demographic nationwide and even throughout the world. Fluoride has definitely decreased the incidence of dental decay in many different populations. Developing countries seem to be more affected by this. So the use of fluoride in the drinking water supply is has been very efficacious.
So then should I also be using fluoride products like fluoride in a mouthwash?
Yeah, it certainly is beneficial to use that. For many of our patients, it's an adjunct or a help every day to be able to control the amount of exposure we have. Just routine diets that we all have seem to have a high content of sugar. The amount of fluoride introduced is important both at home and in the drinking water supply.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio. Our guest is Dr. Thomas Salinas of the Mayo Clinic.
Coming up, this week's health and medical news with Vivian Williams. And right after that, we'll be taking your phone calls at 507-282-1234. Comments and questions from our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, and your tweets at #MayoClinicRadio.
This is Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. Heart disease and stroke, both are serious issues for people with type 2 diabetes. The American Heart Association says at least 65% of people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. So a new study from Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center suggests cholesterol-lowering statins may help people with diabetic cardiovascular disease live longer. Researchers say this info shows the importance of widespread use of statins for these patients. The study's published in the current online edition of Diabetes Care. And now let's talk about imaging. The benefits of these tests, such as CT scans, far outweigh the risks of them for kids when they get the right exam ordered the right way with the right radiation dose. But Mayo Clinic experts say sometimes there is overuse or misuse of these tests. Mayo Clinic is leading an effort to make sure healthcare providers all over the country use imaging the right way to help keep kids safe and healthy. Here's Mayo Clinic radiologist Dr. Steven Swenson.
Our medical physicists have worked with our pediatric radiologists to make sure that we have the lowest possible radiation dose for any exam that we do with CT or fluoroscopy. And it takes a lot of work, but it is absolutely the right thing to do. For every patient that has an exam done at Mayo Clinic, we use the lowest possible radiation dose, and we're very careful to make sure that exam needs to be done. And what we see now is this real exciting opportunity to save lives in this country while saving money.
This commentary was published in the Journal of Patient Safety. And now here's news about heart failure. Researchers from the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania found that a combination of prescription potassium supplements and what are called loop diuretics show a better survival rate for people with heart failure than just taking diuretics alone. And higher doses of diuretics show more benefit. But they also flush out needed potassium. So the researchers say their findings show adding potassium supplements may increase survival, and it could be a relatively inexpensive way to help save lives. And finally, maybe you've heard this, eating beef is bad for you. Well, maybe not. Research from Penn State University and others shows lean beef can reduce risk factors for heart disease. Now, the researchers say this news adds to the evidence that lean beef can be a part of a healthy diet that also includes fruit, veggies, low-fat dairy, and protein from plant sources. Now, this study was published in the Journal of Human Hypertension. And that's a look at headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. I'm Vivian Williams.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio. Information you want from specialists who know on air, online, and on iHeartRadio 24 hours a day. It's time for you to join our conversation. You can contact us by phone at 507-282-1234, at our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or tweet us at hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio.
And they're tweeting us a lot.
Yes, lots of tweets.
So Tom, we have a question. How often should crowns be replaced?
Crowns can be replaced, as often as necessary. What that means is crowns can actually last for many years. I've had crowns in some of my patients for 30 to even 50 years. The question is what happens to the teeth around where the crown is being replaced? Do they change color? Does it fit the same way? Has there been decay around the crown? There's a variety of reasons to replace the crown. Some crowns on natural teeth, as I mentioned, can last for many years. During that period of time, the tooth may develop decay around it. If it does, it can be often, if it's small enough, be just repaired with a filling. If the crown, the structural integrity of it is at risk, and sometimes that happens with some of our older restorative materials, then it can be replaced more frequently. Sometimes the color of our teeth will change over the years. In 10 years, our teeth may even be half a shade to a shade darker. If that's the case, then replacement of, if it's a single crown, might be necessary before that period of time.
So quickly, what are the major indications for a crown?
Crowns generally are recommended for teeth to restore contour, or if there's a large filling in the tooth that's more than half of its size. Those are big reasons to crown.
That's, again, the structural piece of it. If you put too big of a filling in there, then the tooth will just fall apart?
Yeah, it can certainly fracture. There can be lots of reasons for it. Teeth that are root canal treated generally should have crowns placed on them, particularly if they're back teeth.
Sure.
Crowns that are done on teeth that are root canal treated should be replaced more often. Generally, these teeth are regarded as brittle, and they're not quite as resistant as teeth that have their natural nerve, so to speak.
You can give a call with your question, 507-282-1234. We'll continue with a few other tweets. Where can I find a good oral health tips and a checklist to follow?
Well, there's a number of places that the consumer can look. Certainly, the American Dental Association's website is probably the most user-friendly as far as web content is concerned. More in-depth and detailed oral health guidelines can be found on the CDC.gov site.
Sure.
So Centers for Disease Control has a variety of topics talking about everything we've talked about today, oral health, a number of other things. So,
very good. Sharon has a question. Why are dental instruments so loud? Can't they be quieted? Can they be muffled? The noise in our mouths is part of dentist office phobia.
Yeah,
it's a little commentary there with that question.
We echo your results mainly because we have to listen to it all day long as well.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, dental instrumentation has changed over the years. Ultra-high rotary handpieces, or drills as most people know them, are quite effective in their efficiency.
Sure.
In cutting tooth structure away, and it can be done on a very quick basis. The problem with doing that is making these quieter has been an ongoing research topic for many of our investigators. And we really even in this day and age, have not found a better way to do it. Some people are using lasers. Lasers on hard tissue like teeth doesn't really work very well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at this point not making much progress in the rotary instrument world.
That's $1 million question.
It is.
Very good. 507-282-1234. Arlie has a question about well water and fluoride. Good morning, Arlie.
Yes, thank you. I have a question that we've been on. We bought our house about 10 years ago, and we're on well water. And I'm just wondering, do I need to use additional fluoride products, you know, like in our toothpaste and mouthwash and so on?
That would be helpful. It's hard to know if you live in Minnesota, if the content of your well water has enough fluoride in it to make it worthwhile. Generally, we're looking approximately at one part per million. In some cases, such as in Colorado, you might exactly get up to 3 to 4 parts per million, which can, in fact, stain teeth. The question is what content does your well water have with it with respect to fluoride? How can you find that out? You can have a local test. Some of the water quality plants around you might be able to help you with that. That's certainly possible.
I just had a test done, maybe a year ago, and they didn't even look at fluoride. You know, they looked at all the chemicals and some of the other things in there, and we had a huge white iron, but other than that, there was no fluoride mentioned. Maybe it was so low that it didn't measure.
Hmm. That's quite possible. Having fluoride content is important, certainly for you as an adult with drinking supply. But if there are children or developing folks in your home, it becomes even more of an importance.
Huh. Well, so, both my wife and I are over 50, and my daughter is over. She's 23, so.
Yeah. Well, it's still helpful to have it in the drinking supply. It's also helpful, as you mentioned, to use it with auxiliary methods, such as in toothpastes, rinses, and that sort of repertoire. It helps out a lot with oral hygiene and maintenance of oral health over the years.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Arlie.
Thank you.
All right.
So well water can stain the teeth, but so can tobacco.
Absolutely.
Tobacco. So is there any badness that tobacco doesn't cause in the mouth?
I think from you, that's a very, very interesting question. Tobacco's got a number of effects. If it's obviously, if it's smoked, if it's chewed. We have a lot of our patients, and even in Minnesota, that chew tobacco. I think the stats are one in every 5 high school males chew tobacco, which is probably considered pretty high. I think tobacco has a number of effects, particularly oral tobacco, mainly because it's fortified with molasses and sugaring agents to make it palatable and make it pleasurable.
Oh, my gosh.
There's abrasive agents. It's bottom-of-the-barrel tobacco. There's a lot of silica in it, sand contamination. It's not really washed very well. So it has an abrasive quality on teeth, and the molasses and sugar content decay teeth, and the nitrosamines, of course, the worst part of it, causes oral cancer.
Dr. Ebert, though, you were, he said this is interesting coming from you. You work in the Nicotine Treatment Center. Is working with your patients, your primary care goal is to help them get rid of nicotine out of their lives and get over that addiction. But do you ever talk about oral health, the dental oral health with your patients?
Yes, well, because I've worked with our dental colleagues, you know, for a number of years, and we've been in the community and actually worked with local dentists, and we've gone out and we've said, look, we're going to work with you, and we established this quit line. And they said, for smokers, they said, yeah, well, give us something for chewers, because most of the damage that they were seeing and kind of the sort of carpet bombing of the mouth and the tissue changes and the recession and the pain was happening in these smokeless tobacco users, incredibly damaging product. So, you know, and they were talking about, you know, how important it is that that people understand that, you know, even though they're chewing, they should probably still be going to their dentist. But what we saw is that our chewers were almost never going back to their dentist because they knew that they were going to get read the riot act.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious when I see someone who's been chewing. You see that hypertrophic look to the skin, and it looks is very characteristic. And you ask them, you know, are you chewing? And they'll reluctantly shake their head. And, you know, we go through that kind of, you know how that is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We have a lot of patients like that. First and foremost, oral tobacco, chewed tobacco is no safe substitute. Just because it's not being smoked. First of all, I think we should definitely say that. The second part of it, it does have a direct effect on the skin and also the teeth secondarily in the mouth, and it wreaks havoc with tissues in the mouth. It's not a safe alternative. It's very much a part of what you all do with smoked tobacco. It's really a detrimental thing for the oral health.
So is that where we are having the dramatic increase of the head and neck cancers that we're seeing?
Well, certainly. The historical aspect of head and neck cancer looks at many patients that have used tobacco products over the years. What we're seeing now is sort of a new cases of head and neck cancer that approach 35,000 each year, oral and oral pharyngeal cancers that pop up. And a lot of this is not so much from tobacco use. It's what we're seeing in our patients that are exposed to what's known as human papilloma virus, HPV as it's known. And those are the patients that we're actually seeing an increase. We're seeing probably a 2-to-1 of what we call observed to expected ratio, where the observed is what we're physically seeing more so than what we're actually expecting. Mm. And in women, this ratio approaches 2-to-1. So there's a huge rise in the amount of head, neck, and oropharyngeal cancer that we're seeing in our patient population.
So that myth or fact that I have here, the biggest concern when it comes to HPV is cervical cancer. I'll just go ahead and say that must be a myth.
Certainly not. I think HPV definitely affects oral and oropharyngeal more specifically in our population of folks that do pop up with these head and neck cancers.
So has the HPV, has that changed somewhat to become more damaging, or just is something genetically happening with us that is making us more susceptible to HPV cancers, either cervical or a head and neck cancer?
Well, as a virus, we certainly see a large number of HPV mutations. There's a whole different variety of them. HPV-16, I think, is the one that's most implicated in development of oropharyngeal cancer. It's hard to know which is the causative factor in many of this interplay, but there is some controversy as to development of head and neck cancer with oropharyngeal and cancers that have originally been implicated in cervical cancer. Mm-hmm.
And then perhaps some of the declining tobacco use rates, maybe it was a competing risk phenomenon. HPV was exploding or, transmitted through the population in the 1900s. And then as tobacco use went from a 50% prevalence among adults in 1950 to where we are now, 19%, maybe we're just seeing more of it emerging. Relative. It's really hard to know what's driving this.
Yeah, it's an enigma. I don't think we can put our finger on it. The thing that we know is, our ear, nose, and throat folks here that do head and neck surgery, we're seeing just a large rise in it, and it's very concerning. Yeah.
All right, we've got about four minutes left. If you have a question, give us a call, 507-282-1234. Myth or matter of fact, an inexpensive toothbrush does just as good of a job as in a fancy, expensive one, maybe one that you have to plug in that vibrates for you and sonically removes everything.
Certainly, it's nice to have things automated these days. Everything is automated. Accessories make the world go round. A lot of the clarity in this is looking at what's known as an expensive toothbrush. As a secondary fact, is it an automated or an ultrasonic type toothbrush? Mm-hmm. Those are two different things as I take it. Is it a fact that ultrasonic toothbrush can remove plaque more effective than a manual, even the most expensive manual toothbrush? And the answer to that is yes, it does. Hmm. Ultrasonic toothbrushes have a great way of just magically removing plaque and even food debris off teeth. Not so much between teeth, but certainly on the exposed surfaces of teeth. It does a great job with that. It reduces the amount of gingival inflammation as a result of that. Does not take the place of flossing, however.
But is there any reason why I should not have one of those toothbrushes?
I think it's very important to consider, your effectiveness in what you're using now. Some people do just a fabulous job with a traditional manual toothbrush. There's nothing wrong with it. As we get older, we have maybe limited dexterity. Some of our patients have arthritis. They're not able to manipulate as they did when they were 20-some-odd years old. So having this ability to remove plaque off teeth as we get older, it's very important.
And flossing, you mentioned the flossing. I love it when you said you talk to someone who's using chewing tobacco, like you have to ask them, are you using chewing tobacco? It always cracks me up when they say, are you flossing? And I'm always like, can't you tell?
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Can't you tell?
Yeah, we can tell.
Yeah. Like, you're just saying that to make me feel bad. I'm not flossing enough. Should I be flossing 5 times a day, or what am I missing out?
Well, flossing certainly is something that goes hand in hand with toothbrushing. You're able to get between the teeth adequately. You're able to get and debride the area and remove not so much all bacteria, but change the environment. The environment between teeth can be, as we call, anaerobic. And removing that environment on a daily basis is really important because it doesn't allow the disease to happen.
Quick question about over-the-counter tooth whitening products as opposed to what can be obtained from a local dentist. I mean, what would any comment on that?
Yeah, very different. These products that are available over the counter are still very effective. They contain typically hydrogen peroxide, which is also effective, but sometimes it makes teeth more sensitive than what you can get at your dentist's office. So it's more effective. You have more control, really, with using a professionally dispensed product than one that you'd buy over the counter.
507-282-1234. Joe is on the line. Good morning, Joe. Go right ahead with your question.
Good morning.
Yes.
The thought I had, if people are perpetual snackers, does all this fall by the wayside as far as flossing and brushing and all that?
No, definitely not. It's very important. If you snack frequently, there's a lot of even sugar content that's important to remove and debride within 30 minutes after eating. So I think it's even more so for them.
But even like a good rinse of with water, you know, maybe you finish a snack, just have a rinse out your mouth with water. Does that help?
Certainly. It certainly can. It's the idea is to remove the acid content from the mouth. Buffering it with water is great. There's many other ideas that we could talk about external of this program, but the idea is to debride the mouth as much as possible.
All right. Thanks for calling. Joe Nort has a question about mouthwash. Good morning. Go right ahead.
Yes, that Pro Health mouthwash that they sell and advocate using it after brushing, is that effective? And also, what is the difference between like tartar and plaque?
Okay, so I'll answer the second question first. It might be easier. The tartar is sort of a collection of debris, typically plaque and mineral content on teeth. That's calcified. You won't typically be able to remove that too well. Your dental professional will. Plaque is a collection of bacteria in sort of the raw state. It's not been calcified. You can easily remove that with most dental products, over-the-counter products. Hopefully that clears that question up.
All right. Is that it, Nort?
And the mouthwash part?
Well, there are a lot of mouthwashes that claim to have antibacterial effects. Some of these are effective. Some of them aren't. Some of the products available have antibacterial agents in them, like cetylpyridinium as a generic. That's effective in reducing, but it can also stain teeth as well.
Sure. Very good. Thanks for calling in, Nort. And we did not get a chance to get to all of our calls, so hold on the line, and we can talk with you when we're done with the program. But we are at the end of the program, so I wanted to, finally, can you just tell us one or two things we can do to improve our overall oral health?
Well, the key to this is being aware, namely, of what we're putting into our mouth every day. You know, the diet is a tremendous indicator of overall health for a number of reasons, but we have to look at sugar content. Sugar is laden in most of the products that we're consuming every day, so we have to be aware. You know, natural sugars are a little bit different. They do have a cariogenic or decay potential, but we have to look at what we're consuming each day. Having regular dental care is very important. Having a dental home, as we talked about, having a regular primary dental provider is very important to screen these processes and to treat it if it becomes necessary.
Once a year, every 6 months, how often should we be going?
If you have a full complement of natural teeth, we suggest for most adults every 6 months for cleaning and once a year for an annual oral examination.
Make your appointments.
Make your appointments. Call in on Monday. Thank you so much for being here again, Dr. Thomas Salinas.
Thank you.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Coming up, we're going to talk about next week's program. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mayo Clinic Radio, and Dr. Tom Shives is going to be back next week. Dr. John Ebert, you just were saying you don't come in here often enough.
I need to come in way, way more.
It's a lot of fun.
So much
fun.
Well,
next week, we're going to be talking about shoulder problems. Dr. John Sperling is going to come in. And you know, Dr. Shives is the orthopedic surgeon, so I don't even know why I'll show up next week, because they'll just take over the whole conversation.
You will be ignored.
There's a lot of things to consider, though. There are as the population ages, and we're talking about the baby boomers, it does get harder and harder for people's joints. And replacing joints is a tricky business. And even with rheumatoid arthritis, there's problems that you have with your shoulders. And so we're going to be talking about that.
Just saw a person on Friday with a problem.
Really?
Yeah. He was my age, and he's having problems with his shoulder. Oh. What do we do? Maybe I should listen in.
Yeah, because you don't want that. I mean, I guess maybe knees and hips are worse, but you use your arms an awful lot. So a shoulder problem is going to impact your life quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to you coming back at some time, too. We hope that you'll join us.
For more information on topics discussed on this program, please visit our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, where you can access a podcast of today's program as well as previously aired Mayo Clinic radio episodes. Or you can visit us at mayoclinic.org, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health.
You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer, Ron Petrovich, our associate producer and phone screener, Audrey Castletine. Our technical director is Andy Brownell. For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Tracy McRae, and in for Dr. Tom Shives and Dr. Thomas Salinas and
Dr. John Ebert.
Thank you so much for listening.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.